Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm your host, Adam Pranica.
I'm your other host, Benjamin R. Harrison.
Ben, I'm having a great day.
Yeah?
One of the great days, I think.
I'm having a great day myself because I'm down here in Los Angeles, California at the world headquarters of MaximumFun.org. And they've kindly allowed me to sit in the professional-grade audio recording booth.
Oh, man. I really want a professional-grade audio booth instead of a bedroom, which is where I am right now.
Yeah.
Maybe you could describe for the viewer what Maximum Fun HQ is like.
Well, so their office is in Westlake, Los Angeles, which is immediately abuts the MacArthur Park neighborhood and the titular MacArthur Park. So they've got beautiful floor-to-ceiling windows that wrap around two sides of the building and have fairly spectacular views of MacArthur Park and Langer's Delicatessen further in the distance, which is, you know, pretty much where I want to be when I'm in LA.
Have you already gotten yourself a Langer's?
Oh, yeah. I'm podcasting fueled by Langer's.
That's nice. So did you walk into Maximum Fun HQ a conquering hero to flowers thrown at your feet, to back slaps and high fives?
I mean, I've known the gang here for a long time, so it's always lovely to come by because it's a good group of people. Everybody here is like really positive and wonderful person.
That is the feeling I've gotten every time I've visited too. They're just the best.
Yeah, good feels all around, Adam.
And then as soon as you said you were going to record pod from there, they all left. They're yeah. Like, fuck this.
Well, what do you say we get into our episode that we came here to record today?
Why don't we, Ben, it's season 5, episode 21, The Perfect Mate.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Not entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
A lot of people say season 5 is the best season. It's so awesome. You got all these landmark episodes.
Right.
I feel like we're in the worst of season 5 right now.
Yeah, it's a back nine that, you know, it'd be like if you stepped off the front nine of Pebble Beach and onto the back nine, and it's like a municipal golf course. It's like, what the hell happened?
Do you think it's just...
why isn't anybody fixing these divots?
Do you think it's like all the good episodes' proximity to the bad episodes that make the bad ones look so much worse? Like, is that the deal?
Yeah, that could be it. It might be the season that really establishes what cheesy Trek is, because I feel like all of the cheesy Trek humor that happens subsequent to season five feels like jokes about season five. Like,
yeah,
like when an episode premise misses in this season, it misses by a fucking mile.
Yeah.
And when it hits so hard. Like it's like two sides of the bell curve and no middle of the bell curve at all.
There's a weird sort of sci-fi storytelling inversion going on here where a lot of the episodes this season involve the study of the crew instead of the crew studying aliens and civilizations and planets and stuff. That doesn't work for me as much as the exploration element.
Yeah.
But maybe, Ben, the deepest exploration is into the human heart.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, Adam, let's stop pussyfooting around the issue. The entrepreneur is hosting a reconciliation between two warring planets, the Brium and the Valtians. No, wait. Creosians and the Valtians. Brium is the ambassador.
Right.
My notes are confusing.
They could be anything, though. They could be anything and anyone.
Yeah, they are another like one-off set of aliens that we'll never hear from again. Although I think they stole the design of these aliens for the Trill after this, right?
Because they're spotted.
Yeah, they've got those leopard spots.
Yeah, they love those spots so much. They're just spraying them on everyone.
Yeah. I mean, they look great on the right face, you know?
The spots really bring out the symmetry of a classical face.
Yeah.
It's like the beauty mark thing, right?
Oh, yeah. It's the salt that brings out the sweet.
Sure is.
So, the ambassador is concerned because he realizes that he left some lithium batteries in his checked luggage. So he's like, nobody should go down to the cargo bay. Let's just not have anybody go down there. How about that?
He's got some real Moroccan style of dress, I feel like. he's got a big tall hat. He's sort of an older gentleman, and he's there to make peace, and he's brought a gift. And I think any time that you're making peace with someone, a gift really helps.
Right. This is something that Wesley Crusher does with
the boy
chocolate and Riker does with pea soup. This guy does it with a giant glowing orb.
Who wouldn't want that orb? It's like a giant glassy baby. Everyone loves that.
Possibly the most obvious head feint of all time occurs when the entrepreneur picks up some Ferengi who had some shuttle problems.
Brium is not super pumped about his Uber driver making a stop before their final destination. He's like, are you serious right now? I told you not to take any phone calls and we're stopping at a 7-Eleven.
I gotta take a dump, man.
So they pull off and rescue these Ferengi from what can only be described as a crawdad-class shuttlecraft. I wanted to break it in half and suck out the guts.
Yeah, unfortunately, it exploded before you got a chance to do that.
Yeah.
We look forward to enjoying the comforts of your fine ship.
I guess they're supposed to have security on them, but for some reason they just are wandering around the ship and they go to the place that the ambassador was very clear about not wanting anybody to go.
May I ask that the cargo bay be declared off limits to all but the most essential personnel?
Which makes me wonder what Worf thought they meant when they said secure the cargo bay.
It's weird.
Yeah, it is weird.
The Ferengi are always annoying, but I feel like these two guys really take the cake.
Yeah, when one of them like piles up a bunch of, you know, barrels full of highly radioactive substances so that he can reach out and touch the glowing orb. Watching him climb up on this stack of crap that he's made is like just stupendously frustrating.
For so many reasons. I mean, one, he shouldn't be in there. It shouldn't be possible for him to go in there, especially because Brienne specifically asked Picard, look, man, when I check my bag with you, can you make sure that you, like, stick it in the safe and not just in the coat room where any ding-dong can get to it.
Do you think that Worf was like, well, let me go down and make sure that the cargo bay is secure, and he gets down there and he sees that there is a door closed in between the hallway and the cargo bay, and he's like, well, I can't imagine getting through that by myself, so...
He just sort of claps his hands. My work here is done. Yeah. Sort of like the world's most moronic Rube Goldberg project. Like, one of the Ferengi climbs up on top of this thing.
What are you doing?
Falls off of it and then kicks all the barrels into the beams that are holding up this suitcase.
Yeah, it's like little energy beams.
Yeah.
And, I guess once... You know, the beam is broken by one of these barrels, the thing kind of gently lands horizontally, and then the outer casing sort of dissolves, and by this time a fairly large number of people have shown up in the cargo bay, including the captain and Worf and the ambassador. In place of the former shell is a lovely Famke Janssen with spots all over her temples. And she stands up and she walks up to Captain Picard and explains to him,
I am for you, Ulrika Vold.
That's a great way to meet anyone, I think. Puts a little pep in your step. Feels good to get a compliment. It's very disarming.
Riker is disgusted, like, right off the bat.
Right? Frakes does a lot of background acting here. He's in a little bit soft focus, but he is clearly doing facial gestures.
His character is going through a lot, even when he's not speaking. So the deal with this lady, and, you know, there are lots of varying degrees of disgust expressed to the ambassador about this, but the idea is she has been like bred from birth to be the perfect like sexual object for the ambassador from the other side, and like by presenting her to him as his future wife, I guess, or just concubine,
yeah,
that's gonna seal the deal piecewise.
To his credit, Picard is like, what the fuck, are you serious? Like, are we seriously doing this for you?
This is like if you were the captain of Delta Flight 401, you know, from JFK to LAX, and you discovered, like, an Eastern European prostitute in the checked baggage. Be like, whose is this?
I wonder how common of an issue this is for cargo ship captains. Like,
right, but
how many, like, of them know they're transporting slaves?
And I think that this, the, like, facile direction that this show takes in going like, oh, it's just a cultural difference, it's okay in their culture for women to be chattel, is like, it's fucking insane. They make a prime directive argument, right? Which is like, well, how prime directive-y are you in the first place if you are taking this person as a peace offering from one culture to another? Like, not at all. You are inherently involving yourself with the natural evolution of these two cultures.
What's unfortunate is they don't even have this conversation in a professional context. Like, Beverly and Picard have it over breakfast. They don't even have the goddamn common courtesy to have a McLaughlin group about it and, like, really hash it out.
Issue one.
Yeah. Or even, like, you know, the captain has breakfast with just Beverly. Like, sometimes he invites everybody to breakfast for these.
Right. Ever since the Riker eggs incident, no one wants to have breakfast with Riker anymore. You got to get on that Picard breakfast list. Get those croissants. Yeah.
You got to imagine a French man doesn't mess around with bad croissant.
I bet
I had some pretty crap croissant this morning, to be quite honest, Adam.
Were they airport croissant?
I got the jalapeno cheese croissant at the Coffee Bean and Tea Leaf.
That's an abomination.
Seemed like the least worst thing that they had to eat.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I do like a Coffee Bean and Tea Leaf. Hey, there's our third free one.
They have a nice iced coffee.
God,
I like
really
the
do.
Pebble Ice. The Pebble Ice is great. My like of their iced coffee is 90% about the ice that's in it.
Pebble ice is real good. And why doesn't it get stuck in the straw? It seems like it should get stuck.
It's well engineered, Adam.
Yeah.
I looked into getting one of those machines one time.
Oh?
$1,500 minimum.
Minimum? But, where does it go up to?
Oh, you can spend as much as you want on an ice machine. I'm not kidding. Like, ice is one of those things where, like there is a Japanese company that will sell you an ice machine for $1 million, I promise.
Oh, God, I bet that Japanese pebble ice is so great.
My wife said that if we move to Los Angeles, I'm allowed to get a pebble ice machine. I'm holding her to it, Adam.
Well, now that it's been put on the pod, it's etched in stone as a deal.
Yeah. Let's talk about the fun and games in this episode. The deal is Famke Janssen is, like, A, redonkulously good-looking, so it's already, like, distracting having her around, but she's also got this telepathic ability that makes her turn into whatever the sexual fantasy is of whatever man she is in the presence of. And so there are all these scenes in the episode where she's with a different set of dudes and has a very different personality. And it's actually like for all of the like horribleness that is the premise of this episode, I think Famke Janssen does a pretty awesome job of like playing this part. Cause she gets to like do a lot of different kinds of acting.
Yeah. And you know, on the page, it looks like it could skew into cartoonish, but it really reminded me of like what it's like to date a flirt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like her flirtation game is so tight that that you just walk her around a room and everyone loves her. They can't help but fall for her.
Yeah, she's just got a magnetic personality, Adam.
Yeah.
So like Riker shows her to the quarters that she'll be staying in.
Does the whole here's the replicator thing that he's going for.
And she's like putting the moves on Riker, like in a way that I think that we know Riker would never do with somebody else. Like he's gotta know for sure that they're in, and she's like planting surprise kisses on him.
I'm beginning to sense the elevated pheromones you were referring to.
I think we have some evidence that this has an effect on Riker, though he is able to ultimately resist, because when he walks out of the room, he like radios up to the bridge that
you need me, I'll be in holodeck 4.
And then that's never mentioned again.
He needs to go for a cold shower in the mineral baths of Blue Balls 2. He backs out of the room and into the corridor, and they only shoot him from like mid chest to head.
Oh, yeah. It's very hard to hide a boner in that uniform.
He's totally rocking a charger. The spandex can't contain it.
Yeah. Let's just say if the Ferengi need another shuttle, we've got a rocket ship ready to go.
Yeah.
It is the guiding principle of a Starfleet base. If you can't find it within yourself to stand up, tell the truth, you don't deserve to wear that uniform.
I guess because Kamala, who is the Famke Janssen character, has been resuscitated. She's kind of like both a liability but also potentially a big help, because there's a lot of work to be done in preparation for the big event where she is summarily handed off to the guy that she's going to become the concubine of. And she's like really eager to help. And I think that eagerness may come from just being around Picard and like, I guess her imagining that would be a way to ingratiate herself to him. It's like a bad porno script, you know? It's like this woman wants to be the sexual fantasy of every guy she meets. Here are five fairly disconnected scenes about that.
It's hard to look at it as anything besides that, but they really do their best to class it up, you know? like she's a diplomat. Her powers are known as empathic metamorphoses, you know? Like she's given sort of a scientific terminology.
Yeah.
Like, it's a strange depiction of codependency, right?
Yeah.
Like, because She has an interesting scene with Picard in the ready room, where Picard's sort of getting the core of her deal. He's not super happy that she's being locked in her quarters. Like, I guess that's the thing that really bugs Picard. It's not that he's ferrying what will end up being a love slave. It's that I think she should have free range around the ship. And as they talk, she's like, yeah, I'm very attracted to a man of deep passion and conviction like yourself. It made me think what she might feel for a man of special conscience. In a storyline that only a Daud could love.
In many ways, the Kryosians have achieved a version of a real doll that surpasses even my own work.
It's really a Coke versus Pepsi decision for real doll customers.
And I will admit that if you can look past the human rights implications of their product, it is an excellent piece of competition in the marketplace. But my point of difference that I offer is that my real dolls are true dolls, and they don't have any free will.
All of the disgusting sex acts without any of the haunting ethical violations that one might feel as a result.
Uxbridge Real Dolls. For real doll consumers with special consciences.
You know, Adam, it also made me wonder what a certain other captain might think about this.
You see, you don't need to throw yourself at me. I'll just give you a drink.
You know, Ben, as we enter pledge drive season for our show, it's important to play the hits, right?
Yeah. I think Picosby is well rid of him as a repeat character.
It's true.
It really strains my voice, and it's also awful to think about him.
Yeah. Glad it's your job and not mine. So they give
Kamala a chaperone for the rest of her time on the ship. And they give her a chaperone that is fully functional and programmed in multiple techniques, Adam.
I would be pleased to escort you around the ship.
Data is the one man around whom she can, like, truly be herself in a weird way.
Yeah, and it's a weird interplay between them, and especially when you see them together as they go out and tour the ship.
Mm-hmm.
And she flirts with everyone that they meet and does not do that with him. It's got to make him a little sad, right? To the degree that he can feel sadness.
Yeah. Yeah, he's definitely like being friend-zoned in a pretty cruel way.
One of the scenes that illustrates this is he walks her into 10 forward, and Riker like just about knocks over a glass table with his boner getting out of there. He's having I just jerked it on the holodeck style orange juice with Worf, and then pieces out.
And, yeah, she starts like palling around. The other like group of randos on the ship is they rescued some loaf miners from a nearby planet.
The loaf miners of Manwich 2.
It's like a weird, like, oh, I never really thought of 10 Forward as being like a white-collar hang, but these blue-collar guys are in it, and it is.
It's fun to see some knock-around guys in 10 Forward. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like it
I'm into it, for
like
sure.
Makes it feel like a lived-in bar in a way.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's something you look for in a bar, right? Like, I don't want to go to a bar where a bunch of yuppies hang out only. Like, I want people from lots of different lifestyles to be there.
All kinds of drinks, all kinds of lifestyles. You got your refractory period cocktails for Riker. You got your your special friend and confidant prune juice for Worf. I don't know. It's a drink for every temperament. I don't know what these miners are drinking. They're probably drinking Worcestershire sauce, right?
I think they say what they're drinking, and she like wants in. She's like, give me one of those too, and another round for everybody. Ordering a round in 10 Forward is a real, is it is played like it's as exciting as it would be in a bar. If I was in a bar and somebody walked in and said, around for the house, and I was getting a free drink out of the deal, I would be genuinely excited. It never happens.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen it in real life.
I mean, I've gotten around for some buds.
Sure.
But I've never gotten around for the house.
The house is just a whole nother scale.
I don't got it like that, Adam.
There's that bell at most bars that is like the announcement for round for the house. I've never seen that bell rung.
Yeah, it's dusty.
Yeah.
The only time I ever break that bell out is when they're handing down a judgment in a naval court-martial.
Data is like sort of hip to what's happening almost a second too late. Like, the miners are like, hey, Data, why don't you beat it so we can do body shots off of Kamala? And she's like, yeah, line him up. And Data starts walking out of frame and he's like, oh, shit, that's right. I'm supposed to be protecting this girl.
Yeah. Yeah, he's definitely, he's too nice to know what's going on.
Yeah.
Which is, often the plight of the friend-zoned.
You know what? You often forget that he's fully functional and versed in a variety of techniques.
Yeah,
and
but he just doesn't know how to provide that kind of exciting danger element.
Yeah, like, he can only provide the physical aspect. He's not hip to social cues.
No. I think they narrowly avoid turning this into a real catastrophe. And I think that, like, Worf has to break it up.
Is there a problem here?
No, sir.
He's like essentially 86th Kamala and Data from 10 forward.
Yeah.
When she turns around and starts doing like Klingon mating growl at him.
Yeah.
This is like one of those moments where I was like, oh yeah, Worf has a lot of self-control. And it's been like a part of his character from season one, you know? Like, he's talked about this from jump, that like he has a very different set of expectations about what, you know, what behavior should be like. So his enemy is like the forces within him that would make him work against proper behavior on a ship like this. And he gives her a little growl. But then he turns around.
It's not unlike the growl that one gives to tell Stovakor that a warrior is coming. This is like a quieter growl to tell your special lady that you'd like to come.
My love is a fever, long and chill for that which longer nurseth the disease.
Back as promised, Ben. We're here to talk about Max Fun Drive 2017.
The greatest Max Fun Drive.
That's right. I think it's time that our viewers sent a powerful message to the overlords at the Maximum Fun Network that we're not a joke. We're here to be taken seriously, and our viewers are willing to support the production of our show on an ongoing basis.
Right. We'll be finishing our review of The Next Generation this year, but we've got big stuff in our mind for what's next for us, and if you want to put some wind in our sails for those future things, now is the time to do it. And if you join at the $5 per month level, you're already getting great content from us. And that is our San Francisco live show, which was a real fun one to record.
Yeah, maybe the best live show we did, because that was the last live show we did.
Yeah.
At the end of our tour. We were road grizzled, well practiced.
We had been on stage three entire times at that point.
Yeah, yeah. You can hear the quality.
The freebies don't stop there, though, Adam, because there is this crazy cache of Maximum Fun podcasts available at the $5 per month level that are only available to donors. There is a donor feed, and the second you start donating to Maximum Fun, you get access to this thing. It's basically hours and hours of great content that's been produced by all the Max Fun shows over the year. And it's one of my favorite parts of the Max Fun Drive, honestly. That's the $5 a month level. Let's talk about the $10 a month level, which is pretty awesome, because you get a Drive exclusive enamel pin And you get to pick your favorite Max Fun show. So, I mean, you don't have to pick ours, but when you see the one that artist Megan Lynn Cott created for The Greatest Generation, I think you're going to want it. It is a official Dustbuster Club enamel pin, like you would put on your lapel.
When the network was telling us that they were going to create a custom prize for our show and then didn't write back to discuss what that would be, I got to admit, like, I was a little nervous about what form it would take. But then we saw the picture of this pin, and they made a pin about something that we talk about. It's not just title of show and a couple of pictures of us. Like, it's an inside joke from the show. It's super fun.
Yeah.
I love it.
If you see somebody walking around with this pin on, give them a high five from your friends Ben and Adam.
They're in the gang if they're wearing the pin.
You know, and that's something to talk about, Adam. I mean, we work very hard to make this show and make these jokes that come up over and over again. And, you know, like, it's really fun for us, but it is also a ton of work. So, I mean, like, just seeing this pin just made it feel like that work pays off in some way. And, like, getting to see somebody out in the wild wearing this and knowing that they're helping us make this thing is going to be a real thrill.
Ben, at $20 a month, supporters of our show get the Keep In Touch kit. It's 9 custom-made note cards plus envelopes. And these are designed by Sonny D. Fernandez, a guy you might be familiar with as the laugh track to the show Jordan, Jesse, Go. you get a 4-color rocket pen, a Getting There rocket stamp, and a rocket-shaped candle, which I'm being told smells like a freshly sharpened pencil, friendship, and a bit of wax, because it's a candle.
Yeah.
It's meant to inspire you and your correspondences when you write to your friends telling them about all your favorite podcasts on Maximum Fun.
The $35 a month level clocks in with these amazing beer mugs. This is what you're going to want to drink your podcast fluid out of from now going forward, Adam.
Yeah, these are large German Bierstein looking glasses. They look awesome, and they're emblazoned with the rocket ship logo of the mighty Maximum Fun Network.
Yeah, they go real nice on the shelf next to your Shimoda bar and grill glass. Of course, there's the $100 per month level, which is the Inner Circle. And that's the monthly culture club. And then at the $200 a month level, you get your free tickets to Max FunCon 2018. And the best part of all of this stuff is, Adam, these levels are cumulative. So if you go for $35 a month, you get everything from the $20 a month level, the $10, the $5. You get it all.
The whole package is yours, including the warm and fuzzy feeling of supporting your favorite Max Fun shows.
All shows everywhere.
The network is making a big push, a very ambitious and scary push, to get to 10,000 new and upgrading donors. If you want to help us out, that would be really amazing.
10,000 new and upgrading members of the show. Ben, that's like a small fraction of our audience right now. We could do that alone. I hope we get as many Greatest Gen listeners as possible contributing during Max Fun Drive.
It would help all that skepticism that we get around the other hosts of other shows that are less embarrassing than ours.
Right.
So go to MaximumFun.org/donate right now. This is the time. This is the place. Don't wait. Do it now.
If you've been thinking about it, don't think about it anymore. Now's the time for action.
Now, back to the show. The ambassador gets summoned by the Ferengi, who claim that they are there to, like, make some ancillary offer in the peace negotiation, something about, you know, providing freight transport between the two planets, or, you know, serving as some kind of trading attaché or whatever. But they summon the ambassador down, and he comes down, and he's got, like, a bunch of gold coins in his hand. He's like, nice try. This isn't nearly enough money to bribe me.
Everyone knows chocolate coins fucking suck. They taste like garbage.
Even the dark chocolate ones are just not that good.
Yeah, he just sort of flings them on the ground. He's like, I'm insulted that you would think that I would exchange Kamala for these chocolate coins. Forget
it. Give Worf some of these chocolate coins. He's going to love it. He's going to get out his dreidel.
They do some, like, shot, reverse shot, shot of glass table here as the tension builds.
Yeah, the glass table is really the fourth character in this scene.
It's like, hey, what's up? Hey, I'm over here in the corner. What's up? What's up?
Finally, the glass table gets to be on the show, realizing its dream from the start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Little this does is... it know.
I think that the real issue here is you should just never let Ferengi and a glass table be in the same room at the same time.
I think these glass tables need to unionize. I don't think it's right what they're doing to all these glass tables.
Mm-hmm.
Glass table local number 541.
Yeah, they show up outside the Enterprise and inflate a giant glass rat. Everybody driving by honks.
Ever seen a glass table with a picket sign?
Yeah.
I guess you fit that picket sign in a glass table pretty easily because most glass tables have that little hole for the outside umbrella.
Oh, yeah. That's
Stick
a good
that
point.
Picket sign right in there.
Yeah. And then like a wrought iron table tries to go in the door, and they're like, Scab! Fuck you, Scab!
Yeah. I feel like a lot of people out there have been wondering why we haven't been so impassioned about joining the Star Trek writer's room.
Uh-huh.
It's because we shared all of our good ideas up to now. Now we're world building a union of glass tables. That's all we got left.
Yeah. Well, so the ambassador tries to get out of this boring conversation, and the Ferengi are grabbing on him. They like don't understand that no means no. They pull him back, he trips, he goes down right through the glass table, and he's like six bay bound.
There's a lot of rugged pieces of glass on this table. It looks like one of the glass table falls that looks especially dangerous and bad because they're sticking up.
Mm-hmm. When he's in six bay, they get his hat off, and it's like, oh, he's just a normal guy.
Yeah. The whole time I was like, oh, God, that hat must be covering some crazy loaf. Nope.
No.
Just old man brow.
Normal guy with spots, which like kind of read as liver spots because he's so old.
Brienne was supposed to sort of conduct the ceremony. He was supposed to be like the docent for domestic history between the two worlds. Mm-hmm. And with this guy out of the way, like, Picard's sort of the only qualified guy to do peace for these two people. And that's a problem because he doesn't know how.
Right. And the only person that can provide that information happens to be a woman that he has been pretty studiously avoiding this entire time.
Yeah.
And that is none other than Kamala.
Picard's like, there's only one thing I can do to bring peace between two worlds, and that's learn to play the marimba.
Yeah. So do you think he's partly just intimidated by her because she has so much volume? She has like Bride of Frankenstein level volume in this episode, Adam.
She's got great hair. Maybe the best hair we've seen in a long time.
Yeah.
I feel like in season one or two, they would have blown it with this hair. They would have gotten too voluminous.
Right, they would have put like pieces of foil in it or something.
Yeah, they would have tacked a bunch of ribbons on it. Like, they have the good sense to just sort of blow it out, but not blow it out too big.
Mm-hmm. So she's teaching a marimba. They're like, they've got this like this special temple place in the holodeck where they're gonna hold the ceremony, and it's like a reproduction of some historic place. And she's walking him through all the different parts of the ceremony. It's like a, you know, it's like a Rocky montage sequence where Picard is getting ready to fight.
Instead of doing one-armed push-ups, he's playing mallet instruments.
Yeah. And, like, it's perhaps the most offensive part of the episode, because it's like more and more him just normalizing the reason that she is there and the function that she serves. And I mean, like, I think that this episode really like ties itself in circles trying to get out of this being what it is, you know? Like, she's always going like, no, this is what I want to do. This is my only function in life. And yet, like, she is a female character that is 100% defined by the man that she will wind up with. And we meet this guy now.
Where is the dissenting opinion, like, from one of the crew members? That's what the story was missing, the one dissenter.
Well, it's like,
and I don't think Beverly counts.
They give a very, like, brief amount of pushback from the doctor. And I think Frakes, like, puts it in, you know, in his way outside of the script. But, they didn't write a character in to say, hey, how about we not, in, like, tacitly endorse human trafficking by taking this woman to this guy?
You want to know how we can save a character's life, Ben? What if Geordi was the dissenting opinion?
That would have been amazing.
He turns a major corner with that.
He could have been like, hey, guys, I've learned a lot over the last couple of years.
I'm ready to not be a monster anymore. So we finally meet the arranged groom, and he is like Ginger Billy Crystal. And it sort of has to be, right? Like, you know, the build up to meeting this guy has got to be like, it must mean someone wrong for her.
Right.
That's how the math has to pencil out here. And that is the payoff that we expect, and that's the payoff that we get. This
right.
guy is interested in doing business, and he's barely interested in the idea that he's about to be given this great gift, I guess.
She's looking forward to meeting you.
But I've got my country's 500th anniversary to plan, my wedding to arrange, my wife to murder, and Gilda to frame for it. I'm swamped.
And, like, that's, like, I think also another attempt at putting a beard on this very misogynistic episode, like, oh, like, I'm not all about human trafficking shit. I'm just here to, like, make sure that the peace is achieved.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny to think about whether or not that makes him better or worse for this whole thing. Like,
mm-hmm.
by having him not be overly enthusiastic to be given a woman, like, does that make him quote unquote better than it would be if he was like, oh my God, I can't wait to get this real doll. It's going to be killer.
Just before you commit, sir, I would like you to do a little bit of a comparison shop. And I know that they have beat me to market in a lot of key functionality, but the X-Bridge model is now perfectly in line from a feature set standpoint with the Creosian real doll, and it does not have any ethical concerns because it's a totally manufactured product.
What can I say to put you in a real doll today?
I'm even willing to throw in the clear coat for free. I obviously have to run that by my manager, but I would really like to do that for you. You seem like a really good guy.
It's interesting the gymnastics they do with this character to just sort of walk you up to the line of hating him, but not overtly creating a hateable character, but instead just a hateable scenario.
I am the cutest of all. There are four lights.
And so we have this, you know, the lead up to the ceremony, and Kamala is in, like, what can only be described as a space wedding dress. And she confesses this thing to Picard that's, you know, meant to play for tragedy, which is that she's been, you know, going through this biological process of being a sex pot to everybody she meets, and ultimately, like, that has to imprint on one particular person so that she's not just a total handful of a wife. Am I right, Adam?
Give me a break.
You leave her alone for 5 minutes and she's cheating on you. But she's imprinted not on Ulrich, the Vaultian ambassador, but on Picard.
Isn't it strange that the most significant timeline to the whole story is the moment that she imprints on the person she's with? Like, there is a countdown to this. We are told there is a countdown to when this diplomatic mission needs to take place. That's the whole reason Picard has to do it with
right.
Brienne in Six Bay. Like, we got to get this done so she can meet Ginger Billy Crystal, so she can imprint on him and no one else. And from then on, we never know what the deadline is.
Yeah, they should have put a little ticker in the corner and just counting it down.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess the idea is that it's just like a biological function, right? Like, you know, like you never know when you're going to get your period, and then you just are, you know, riding a bike somewhere and you're like, give me a fucking break.
I sort of saw it as a little bit manipulative.
Oh, absolutely.
I think she wanted to fall in love with Picard. I think Picard was her ideal mate, and she saw a way out of an arranged marriage by flipping the switch on imprinting with him and not telling anyone that it was about to happen.
But she knows that she has to go do it.
Yeah.
Like, she's not asking Picard for a way out. Like, I think if
she...
No, she's saying, like, I have to go be with this guy now and I can do it, but I'm always going to love you.
You said something pretty interesting about the end of this episode. So, like, Picard sort of acts as father of the bride, walks her down the aisle to Ginger Billy Crystal. She says her line about, you're my boy, Ginger Billy Crystal. And then they kiss, and then they're linked forever. And then it's the ISO in on Picard's very sad face. And then that's the tragedy. And I use that word because that's the word that you used. Was this an effective tragedy for this character?
I mean, like, it is a tragedy in the most trite way possible, which is Picard didn't get the beautiful woman as prize.
Picard is very unlucky in love, isn't he? All the women that he's fallen for on the show have been extremely detached and unwilling to, or just uninterested in having a relationship with him. He's never made it work with anyone. The one woman that he's especially close to is still at arm's reach in Beverly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it rang as a little bit tragic to me, as sincerely tragic, in that, you know, like, here is, right or wrong for how this woman is constructed as a person, like, a perfect person for Picard, a mathematically perfect person for him. And
yeah. She's like Vash if Vash wasn't amoral.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And so I saw some tragedy in that. If you can somehow stomach how she's constructed as a person and her reason for being, you know, you can't stop her from existing. But if she's going to have a great life, being with Picard is probably the way that happens, right? And so there's a form of tragedy, too, in her being with someone who will never appreciate her the way that Picard would. Like, is there something ethical about that? Like, is there an ethics in the idea that wanting her to be with Picard because that is the best possible consequence for her terrible position?
I don't know. I mean, it's just such an absurd premise from the beginning that you have to, like, rely on too many absurd givens to get to an ethical upshot with this.
Yeah, I can't wait to not read all the comments about how I'm pro female sex slave when this episode drops. So, good job.
The captain walks the ambassador to the transporter room. The ambassador's like, "Hey, you fucked her, right? Did you fuck her? You can tell me. You fuck her?" And Picard's like, "Have a good trip, buddy."
It's a weird moment. Brienne has been super professional throughout. It's a weird moment for him to just drop the veil and go like, "Brother, they attached me to this assignment because I'm an old man and I have no more lead in the pencil." Yeah. You seem like a comparatively younger man to me. How did you resist her? Picard sort of does that pivot the way he does in the episode with Riker and the androgynous person that he's attracted to. Like, he answers by not answering.
Right. Did you like this episode, Adam?
Man, I really don't know. I was affected by what happened at the end, both the sadness for Kamala's life and the sadness for Picard, like, in just sort of witnessing a tragedy happen in front of him. Like, yeah. That sucked. The cartoonishness of the Ferengi are awful. That's an unforgivable sin for a end of season 5 episode. That's supposed to be a great season. Like, how are you writing Ferengi that way in season 5? Give me a break.
Yeah. It's pretty rough.
I don't know. I guess that's my answer. I don't know if I like this episode.
I will come down firmly on the side of not liking this episode. I think it's a turkey.
I really thought I would. I remember Famke Janssen being awesome. And it's not her fault. She's great in this episode.
She totally is. She totally,
she
like,
some
makes
scenery.
Yeah, she makes the case for being a really successful movie star after this.
Yeah, absolutely. Good job by her. You get to see Patrick Stewart really chew up some scenes with a future movie star, too. Like, they really elevate each other's game in a fun way.
Yeah.
Yarmouk and Jalad at Tanagra.
When I was growing up, I didn't have anyone to tell me about personal grooming. I had to learn these things on my own. So I'm here to save you some embarrassment and recommend the grooming tools that I use. The products from Manscaped. Now, this is a company that constantly has its mind on your bush. Imagine the meetings they have. Imagine the pictures they have in their PowerPoint presentations. Now imagine your junk looking its best thanks to the Lawnmower 5.0. This thing is the latest Bonch trimming technology. With two interchangeable heads, a standard one for taking just a little off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants.
Are you looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life? Aura frames are beautiful Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos. Every mom I have ever given an Aura frame to has absolutely loved it, and that includes a lot of moms I know. This is a gift that I have personally given many times, and it's great. I can upload photos from my phone the moment I take them. And that means that mom or grandma out there is going to get pictures of their loved ones delivered to their living room. And right now, Aura is having a great sale for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com, and use the code SCARVES at checkout to show your support for our show. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible!
Drunk!
Frank Shimoda.
I did. I got to give it to Kamala. There's a line in that scene where she's walking Picard through the playing of the vibraphone or whatever it is, and he's like telling her like, "Oh yeah, I used to play guitar when I was a kid, but I hated practicing, so I stopped." Did you ever learn an instrument? She's like, "Yeah, I learned all of them." And it really reminded me of that time Katie Couric asked Sarah Palin what newspaper she read. I couldn't tell if she was being truthful. Yeah. Oh no, I learned all instruments, or she was like, "Yeah, no, I know all of them."
All instruments everywhere. That is a shit ton of instruments, Ben.
I know. This is space, man. Like, this is like every culture's instruments. You know them?
She's like a musical polymath. It could be the greatest tragedy of her life is not being in an arranged marriage. Is that she doesn't join a great band?
Yeah, she should be in a super group, Adam.
Yeah, yeah.
Who's your Shimoda?
It's hard for me to give my Shimoda, no pun intended, to anyone else besides Riker. Like, he is the guy who is willing to experience her sexuality in the most cartoonish way possible. Like, he is the perfect foil for her.
Yeah.
Like, he gets seduced by her. He has to go take a cold shower afterwards. Like, you've had that conversation with a buddy, right? You're in a bar talking about a girl, and then that girl walks in, and then your buddy has to just fucking leave. Like, there's the idea that, like, sometimes the troubles of, like, the future seem like total sci-fi fantasy, and then other times there are very human contemporary troubles that these characters have, and that just seemed like super really now, you know?
He's just gotta have rubbed his crank raw in these couple of days. Yeah.
That's why he's swinging his leg over the chair. It's the chafing. What do we have coming up for the next episode?
The next episode is season 5, episode 22, Imaginary Friend. A little girl's imaginary friend becomes a frightening reality for the crew when she threatens to destroy the entrepreneur. Do you remember this episode, Adam?
How many times do we have to see that fucking elementary school set?
Yeah, they built it, so gotta use it.
Yeah, I remember this episode. I remember it being a real dog.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not really looking forward to it, and unfortunately we have no vetoes.
Yeah.
I don't know if this one would have been a veto for me, because I think that this one's going to be like funny bad, but I don't know. I guess we'll have to see.
I'm always thinking episodes where people get taken over by things make them deep voice aliens. Is the girl a deep voice alien? I can't remember.
I don't know.
It seems like a frequent consequence to having your body taken over. Get that great big deep voice.
Yeah.
I guess we'll find out.
That's going to be the next episode, Adam.
Ben, we usually use the end of our episodes to thank a variety of people, and I think it's appropriate during a Pledge Drive episode to thank our legion of viewers who have supported us along the way, and especially now during the Pledge Drive, right?
You know, the folks at Max Fun have on multiple occasions said that they were really impressed with the level at which our viewers supported the show before we ever did a Max Fun drive. It's not normal for as many people to have made the proactive choice outside of a fun drive to support. So we have a very special debt of gratitude to pay to those people, because they really gave us an air of legitimacy and really helped us through our first year of making this show. And the idea that a bunch of people are going to add themselves to that list that support the show financially is really touching. I mean, today is a day that maybe people will be aware of. I like screwed something up, and I had a version of an episode that wasn't really quite done show up in people's feeds accidentally for a couple hours, and I like scrambled to get it down, but by the time I had gotten it down, it had been downloaded like 2,500 times. And I was like really annoyed at myself. And then I was like, Ben, it is amazing that 2,500 people download anything you make. So,
yeah.
You know, it made me feel a lot better about a situation that I was being, I was really angry at myself over, because it was a dumb screw up that I did because I was, you know, tired and distracted. And, you know, the support that we get for this show is amazing. And I think that the people that listen and support the show know that the money that they're contributing is going directly to us making this the best thing it can be, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I've always taken this project as seriously as a job, and I think that shows with just sort of the production value that we put into it. We are going to go on to do more shows after this. I'm positive about it. But this is the only pledge drive that The Greatest Generation in its current form is going to have. So if what we've done on this show has made your day better, your week better, if you see the value that the show has given you on a week in and week out basis, we would really appreciate it if you let us know that through whatever donation you are comfortable with during the pledge
drive.
Yeah,
if you like to tip a dollar or two for a drink at a bar, think about the you know, money you would spend on a monthly basis as being that, and think about, you know, what whether what we're doing here is of value to you. And if it is, and you're in a position to support, you'll get some cool prizes and our undying gratitude. Not to make this any longer than it needs to be, Adam, but we should thank Adam Ragusea and Dark Materia for our music. And once again, everybody that's listening, and great folks at MaximumFun.org. Thanks all. And with that, we will be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, and another episode of The Greatest Generation that we wish would just go back to being invisible the way it was supposed to be.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.